Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new Eufective podcast booster. Today is the first one in English, to be honest, and I am super excited because today I have a real, real expert with me. He was in McKinsey, he was in TUI. His last job was to be the delivery manager for more than 270 people in a pure software play in Gaming One. Welcome, Steve Colley.
Hello, Marcus. Thanks for being here with you today. And actually thrilled to get your questions and to see how we can boost it up.
Yeah, Steve, you have really a long track record in, let's say, IT. You have a long track record in project portfolio management. At a certain stage in your career, you also developed, as we do in Eufective, you were part of a development team of developing portfolio management, project management software. And then later, within your other companies you've worked for, you've been a heavy user of these systems. If you look back at the last 20 years, what were the major shifts in the industry? What were the main, let's say, things which hit the market and which fundamentally changed the way project management, but also portfolio management was done in companies from your perspective?
Very difficult question and very long. But at the end, when you think about all those 20 years, you see that you come from a very industrial, iterative way of thinking, where on the moment you have extreme programming because we wanted to achieve things fast, where in 98, the Agile Manifesto came up. And actually, it was growing. A few years later, Scrum hit at us face and companies were obliged to go fast, and framework of agile methodologies were implemented and obliged to follow this framework, where you have nothing from actually portfolio management that is taken care of. And a lot of companies missed and had no view on their investments anymore of what happened. And a lot of shadow IT raised it up, specifically for software, but it exists in all types of industries. And that's one part where we need to find a way through all those years how we could combine business capabilities, investments, and output of your investments.
If you talk about portfolio management and project management, a lot of our listeners, they may know and, you know, may think they know what project management is, because somehow a lot of things, if not everything in an organization, is a project. But if we talk about portfolio management, I think that term is not necessarily known to everybody. Maybe you think about your stock portfolio or something like that. But if you think about portfolio management in a business context, how would you describe that? What is a portfolio management tool doing anyway?
For me, a portfolio management, you can combine it a bit as a program management, but on the fact it's more about hitting the strategies that the company wants to achieve with their investment. And it's a bunch of quantity of initiatives that need to see daylight on a moment in time. We are always speaking in short term, so 3 to 5 years max, where we can address that to a value creation plan, moreover. And indeed, often people don't see, I need a project, and they don't see only their project. But at the end, what is important, it's the sustainability of the strategy, and together then with the complexity of the product and how the business capabilities are joining together, what they need to deliver. And these synergies, they are extremely, extremely difficult to find. Because a board, they want to understand, I put my money on the table, what does I get back? And the guy in the team says, hey, I want my freedom. I want to be able to do what I want. And this is always collapsing. And then there exist things of shadow things. One team goes left, the other team goes right, the other team goes straight on. And the board say, hey, I want to go backwards. It doesn't fit, it doesn't work. Yeah. And that's where portfolio management, and that's where we actually, when we really put a good system in place, where I've tried many times, I fall so many times, because failing is a big part of what we could achieve, and why at the end here we had really 270 people working really successful together to deliver what we were expecting and on the strategy. Well, that's amazing to see. That's where I'm really, I get chills on my arms.
Cool. Before we go there, you said that Agile hit the market in 98. And from my experience, it took a while in Europe to really grasp and to become one of the delivery methodologies, especially if we talk about software development. How did you perceive the adaptation in the companies? Because traditional companies were used to, let's say, the waterfall methodology, right? And then basically the agile movement took place. And if you look back at, you know, the years, I don't know, 2010, 2014, 2015, when agile really, hit the market, how did you perceive that adoption rate in the companies you've worked for?
So oftenly, they try to implement the model as is. So they look to the model, they believe in the model that is presented to them, and at the end, the model, without saying model A, model B, like Spotify, Safe, Scrum, whatever you do, it's a model or it's a framework. And what's happening is that they see the model, they believe in the model, and then you have a guy who really, at the end, it's a cashing machine behind. They give you certification, they give you quantity things behind. And I don't like to use the word, but the guru comes and he sells it correctly. And the company, we need to do that.
The guru comes.
Yeah, the agile guru.
The agile guru comes.
Often it starts with that. And he comes and he sells and we need to follow it at that. Nevertheless, today you can go for any use case in the world. Not one company has almost fully succeeded to implement not one complete framework. Because first of all, it's layers on layers on layers on layers on layers. Doesn't land. And that's a big problem. And how I lift it, that you always come to a company and you see that two things happening. Organizational chaos within the teams. They think agile is freedom. It's not. But that's what put in the mindset of the people. When you ask about in that company, what is agile for you? You get an answer B. What is agile for you? You get an answer C. Yeah, and you can go whatever you want. And if the top doesn't want to understand what is agility, and if they don't want to do it, you go nowhere.
Yeah, that's also the experience we as a, let's say, software consulting company experienced with our customers, that a little bit exactly like you described. At the beginning, there was this, we have to develop it by the book. Then there were task force with, let's say, the gurus, and they tried to implement an approach which in a lot of companies was way too sophisticated for the, let's say, general public. So for everybody involved to adopt it 100%, like within 2 or 3 months. And what we now perceive is that, or we now see in our customers is that they find their own way. So that they do, let's say, a water agile approach where some projects are still governed and run. So we're not only talking software companies now, but they are still governed and run in waterfall, especially if we talk about long-term investment. And then whatever is available, if you want, for an agile deployment, it gets developed in a more agile way. But exactly like you said, it's never really done 100% by a certain methodology, right?
You're very correct, Marcus, and I can support you that. Big fact is that a company needs to think about his business processes. That's first of all your business processes. What's the end objective with your business processes? What type of customer do you have? Is it client-facing or not? Is it the government? Because it's totally different. But those business processes are important because everything runs around a capability map. A capability is a business process. And when you can measure that and when you can view that, the ability to form yourself around that backbone of business processes are much easier. And when you dial that to a software development part, you need to look to your, actually to your stack, how your legacy of your stack is. We always think we need to go to the next step. We need to go in an evolution of technology. That's correct. We need to be agnostic in front of technology. But you have a legacy. And at the end, the value you raise in your company comes from your legacy. And you need to think about that together with your business capabilities. And from that perspective, you can grow.
Mm-hmm. Once a CFO of a multi-billion euro company, a CFO, told me in private, look, you know, I believe in agile. I really believe it's we are onto something there. I can see that the output the teams are producing is higher. But what I'm missing is I miss transparency on where I actually spend my euros and what those euros I spend as a CFO is delivering back to me. Can you give a little bit feedback on that statement?
I fully understand him, because one of the biggest issue we are facing there, and it's the typical issue, is actually the translation of what's happening in a software department towards a finance department. It's one of the biggest issue we have. It's being able to what's happening there, giving the same information in the same transparency towards the CFO. He never gets that. And when you start thinking, how does I am gonna actually move towards an investment of portfolio mechanism, you are able, if you can tie those both things together and have a system that you get, I would say, not agility, but more a federated governance, who is a type of agility. But if you can put into the teams a federated governance towards a good portfolio mechanism that is pure based on the content of the investment of the initiatives, and you can give that to the CFO, the guy will have a smile, because he will understand where his money goes. And he will be able to say, there, I'm going to give a go for that investment. He will know his return. And always, when you're thinking about agility and finance, I really appreciated a very good book, Agile Budgeting. It's not so young anymore, but at the end, what he does inside, it's really true. He just uses one KPI, only one KPI. And actually, this KPI, it's good enough to actually follow each team. And it's enough information to actually give it to the CFO to say how a team is performing. Nothing more, nothing less. But with the portfolio mechanism around it, who will not touch the team, you will get to the next level, actually.
In another speech I've seen you giving, you said once, maybe a little bit provocative, agile is dead. Is this one of the reasons why you said agile is dead? Because the classical implementation doesn't really allow you to track back value to an invested euro? Or is that wrong to say like that?
I would say it's partially correct. Yes, I'm a bit kind of provocative way. So I like to say agile is dead. Very simple. When you look through the history, agile is already there for so many times, but the technology rises that fast. We are already in the age of AI, but we are still with agile methodologies and framework. It doesn't match. And it's time, I think, companies think about versatile governance, meaning take your governance in a mode where it fits for purpose for your business domains and business capabilities and with your stack. Think twice before doing something. You can use agile tricks. You can use some part of scrums at a team level. You can use OKRs at a certain level. You can all use those tools. Those are all small tools, and you can combine them as much as you want to achieve your governance. And that are we calling versatility, because for me, you see that in a way, like it's a big basket of full of tools, but just use the one that get value and that get the shit done at the end. And that's agile as well.
But if you could talk a little bit on, because if you have a big basket and a lot of tools to choose from, like you said, OKRs and KPIs and agile and Kanban and Scrum and stuff like that, you still may be end up confused to say, well, okay, even if it's like a federated approach. Now, how should I do that? So how did you do that in Gaming One? So if you have 270 people working for you and they should deliver high quality software, which is used by thousands of people on a daily basis. So how did you structure your approach in order to fit for purpose?
So we started from extracting a collaboration effort and a content effort. So what is a collaboration effort is an objective that the team needs to achieve. Mm-hmm. What is a content effort is a content objective, like an initiative, a real something that we need to deliver in production. But the team needs to deliver maybe the full objective or just a part of the objective. What did we do? We started to build a capability map. So we started to think about all the domain clusters or the business capabilities and the business processes within the company. And we
actually... Can you give like one or two examples that it sounds a bit more tangible?
Business capabilities, to give you an example, and then tangible, a payment. Mm-hmm. Payment is a capability. Sales is a capability. Marketing is a capability. A subscription, an onboarding funnel. So we are talking about the customer capability, and you have different levels of capability. If you got enterprise architecture, listen to this podcast, they will understand what I mean with different levels of capabilities. You can go as far as you want into the capability model, but you will always look from a high perspective. And when you read each capability, actually you can understand what's the business of the company. And to give you an example, in iGaming, you start with a casino capability. From a casino who is actually the base of the product because we are selling casino games. From there out, of course, we are thinking about acquisition and entertainment. Why? We need to acquire persons. Yeah. Customers, and then you have acquisition and entertainment. We need to entertainment. Entertainment is not the game. It's to give a loyalty system and so on. Of course, you have a customer on the moment. He needs to be onboarded on the part. Underneath everything, you have compliance. It's another type of capability. But we actually have put people around in those business capabilities. But when you have an initiative, and an initiative, if you say, hey, I want... To give you an example, a new loyalty system with a new coins thinking way of part. A coin is a payment part, but the loyalty goes to the entertainment part. Mm-hmm. And then you think, oh, I've got two teams or maybe four teams because we have a lot of the requests in the loyalty capabilities. So you need to think about portfolio management on that one. And you have actually project managers who are managing initiatives only on their content. They are not managing a team. They are managing content and their dependency between their teams. And then you have actually a full domain delivery, I would say, team. You have a delivery manager that is responsible for the objective to reach of the domain cluster. You have a domain architect who is a type of solution architect that is responsible for the solution on the domain and always with the legacy and the blueprint and the future of technology that they are achieving. And then you have what we called an experience manager, because it's all about experience in iGaming. You can have a very good product, but a shitty experience, you will never come back. Mm-hmm. If you have an amazing experience, you will always come back. Your product can be less good than the competitors. Doesn't matter.
And the experience manager would be within every domain or within every capability?
Every domain, you have actually those three types of persons. Mm-hmm. Why do we do that? It's because in the traditional, when you look to other methodologies of agile, they put a tribe leader. That's often heard today. But the tribe leader has always, I would say, a heart more into portfolio management or product-wise. Is it a product owner or is it a product manager? We never know. Is it someone who is more technology-related? Is it someone more business-related? And all his choices will be always derived where his heart goes. And you don't have actually this neutral way of viewing where they need to collaborate together, where you have actually, we called it a kind of a trio master. And they need to collaborate. And they are, all those three, responsible for all the teams in their domain.
Now, if you have this domain approach and the domain start basically applying for internal limited resources, how do you prioritize? So what was your logic and what was your, within this, let's say, software delivery approach, what were the KPIs where you said, was it customer satisfaction? Was it budget? Was it time to market? So did you have these type of classical KPIs to prioritize, or did you have another type of value system for that?
No, we had a type of NPS score per domain. Mm-hmm. What we did is we called it the key elements of truth. Mm-hmm. So meaning when the customers are going in that key element of truth, they will stay with the experience or not. And based on the number there, we actually have a kind of an NPS score or KPI. However, that's only on the domain level. We have that as well on the full pipeline, meaning when you look to the complete product end to end, we had those three key elements of truth as well. And we were looking more to the score there. On the other mechanism, that's when we look through the experience part. But it's not only about experience. It's also about the future of the stack. It's also about the investment. And there comes actually totally out of those domains, a PMO, classical, like we all know about it. And everybody, oh, what are you doing? No, they are thinking about the investment. They are thinking about the initiatives. And we had then, within the portfolios, there were different approaches, but we had actually an initiative that could be entitled to only one domain, or what was 80%, we had initiatives with multiple domains or multi-dependencies. And they were classical project managers, and they were looking at that in a classical way. But the fact is how the delivery manager and the project managers were collaborating together by quarterly mindset. And then you have the SAVE presented, where we used some parts of the SAVE to be able to actually have a cross-examination and a cross-prioritization based on the input of the PMO, because the PMO was responsible for the priority on the enterprise view. We call it domain and enterprise view. We had the ability to have a correct prioritization each quarter of the strategy and what one needed to be achieved in each team. It's very difficult to explain. It's sometimes very easy to show it, but we had really this quarterly approach. We had, of course, long-term approach where PMO was more responsible, but they needed to collaborate with this delivery manager. Big thing was to achieve the fact of a correct titling from strategy to those initiatives. And this is the same problem we have always. As long as your executive XCOM is not steady and consistent in their mindset, you have a big difficulty to be able to have a good straight path forward.
Now, I assume it took you a while to basically come to your company-specific setup of how to deliver software. Can you maybe give, when you finally found your setup with the domains and the federated approach and the PMO on top, can you maybe give one example which really blew your mind in a positive way, where you said, wow, now this, I didn't expect that to happen, because that would not have been possible in, let's say, the previous implementation you had.
Yes, I'm going to use two examples in one. But when we started to shift this governance, because it's not a governance I invented, it's existing. It's just using the minimal tools to achieve the maximum outcome in either way. And it's putting on the right moment together with the right person, having the right team, having the right mindset. So it's about human a lot. Mm. The most beautiful part was on the moment it started to shift towards that governance, with the team, what we called then the governance crew, to achieve it, they were had the ability to each quarter almost deliver every target that we have planned. And for 1 year, it was 22, we achieved 92% achievement rate of our strategical target that we confirmed to do. Mm-hmm. So not the full portfolio, but the really each quarter, what we said, we're going to achieve that target, we commit to that target, we achieve them always on time, within budget, within quality. To give you an example, one of the most powerful thing, the company came from around 40 to 50 deployments a year. You need to understand that this company is a multi-operational, multi-brand, multi-technology. We had around 20 operations running all over the world at minimum. But coming to deploy those 20 operations from 40 to 50 deployments a year who were difficulty, after 2 years being able to each quarter, each 2 weeks, going from 2 weeks to 1 week deployment of each operation and being able to achieve 92% of it, I think every company would sign for that, because
yeah,
you invest and you know it's going to land.
Yeah.
with the flexibility to say each quarter, I want something else. I want my long term, but I want really my short term. Why? Well, iGaming, we need to respond as fast as possible. We need to, if marketing needs a change, we need to be able to change on the marketing side, because the player, they want new things every day. And I'm really, I was really impressed about that, because we went on the US market, and it was an unknown territory for the iGaming to go on the US market. And it was a very difficult implementation, but in 1 year, each quarter, we had a new operation in the US starting.
Cool.
And that's really impressive.
Steve, thank you very much. I think that was really a great conversation from my side. I learned a lot. I learned about a federated approach especially in, let's say, a software delivery and software deployment. But I think that also holds true for a lot of project and portfolio management, approaches. I learned that how each company needs to find and needs to tackle their own way in dealing with Agile and all their tools, all the tools out there, they are, in order to come up with, a more appropriate, a more, state of the art delivery model. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Marcus.
And I hope I see you soon back again in this podcast studio, because I think we've got a lot more to talk about.
Thank you very much for the podcast. I appreciate it.